Well, friends, sorry I can't be with you there in person today. Unfortunately, I've got COVID, so I'm recording this from my study, and I hope it's encouraging for you. I remember growing up when we had a divided household when it came to supporting rugby league teams. When I was born, we lived in Mona Vale, and so I naturally supported the Manly Sea Eagles, which I've done ever since. My brother, however, he was a different kettle of fish. You see, the first team he supported was St George, which was fine when they won the premiership in 1979, but when the Parramatta Eels won three premierships in a row between 1981 and 1983, suddenly his loyalty to St George was divided. Suddenly, he started supporting Parramatta. He would say he supported both teams. It just depended on which team was winning that got his attention. The passage we're looking at today, James is speaking to Christians who have divided loyalties. In verse 8, he calls them double-minded. We might say they have divided hearts. And the problem is they love God, but they also love the world. Now back in chapter 1, verse 29, James urged them to keep themselves from being polluted by the world. And in this chapter this morning, James wants to address this divided loyalty and call on his readers to submit to God. He moves from addressing their words and deeds in chapter 2 and 3 to dealing with the inner motivation of their heart. And his point is that when Christians fully submit to God, when we get rid of our divided loyalties, then you'll see a faith that's marked by deeds. That's what will guard the Christian person from being polluted by the world. Now, there'll be some of you here this morning who are all too aware that your heart and therefore your loyalty is divided and you are being polluted by the world and you know you need to make a change. And there'll be others of us among here this morning who are quite comfortable with our life and think we're doing okay and there's nothing really to look at here. But we need a wake-up call because we're oblivious to the division that exists in our heart and the division of our loyalty, and that means we're polluted by the world and we don't know it or we can't see it. Either way, friends, today's chapter is a friendly rocket from James to a church in every generation to remind us that God calls on us to submit wholeheartedly to him. Not partially, not when it suits, not the bits I'm okay to hand over, no, everything we are, everything we have, and everything we do. That our faith is a faith that works in submission to him. Now, one of the outworkings of their divided hearts and loyalties is that there are divisions in the church. James says there in verse 1 to 3 that there are fights and quarrels. They are attacking one another. He even says they kill one another. James isn't speaking literally here. He's using a metaphor. If you know Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, you'll recall how Jesus said that anyone who hates another is like a murderer, and both will be judged, because both hate and murder come from the same source. And James is making the same point. I want you to realise your fights and quarrels come from the heart, he's saying. The heart that's divided and polluted by the world. And what is it they're fighting about? Well, it's money and wealth and possessions. He says there in verse 2, you want something, but you don't get it. You covet, but you cannot get what you want. And what they do get, verse 3, they spend to satisfy their own pleasures and comfort. Now, this shouldn't surprise us. Jesus often spoke about the hold of money, wealth, and possessions have over our hearts. He said it's harder for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God than for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. And the reason Jesus taught this is because we think these things can give us the things that God can't. We think that money and wealth and possessions can give us things like security. You know, if I just have enough money, enough insurance, live in a safe suburb, send my kids or grandkids to a safe school, then I'll be secure. I'll be in control. I'll be safe. And we do that because we foolishly think that we are in control. And we fail to trust that God is the one who's sovereign. He is the one who's really in control. And we fail to trust that he is good and will give us what we need. And so we chase after money and wealth because it feeds our heart's desire for security. We also chase after money because we think it gives us comfort. If I just have enough money, then I can have that nice car, that nice holiday, that nice couch, that nice dinner out. I can have my streaming subscriptions because money feeds my heart's desire for comfort. But also, it feeds our heart's desire for approval. Because people will look at our salary, or our financial situation, or the car we drive, or the house we live in and say, oh, they have it together. They must be smart. They've made good choices. And so money can also feed our heart's desire for approval. But the quarreling and fighting and battles over money, wealth and possessions are really only the symptom. In the next few verses, verses 4 to 6, James deals with the source of the problem, which is the heart. It's divided. It's a heart that is unfaithful. You see, in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, God's people, including the church, are constantly referred to as his bride. And here in James verse 4, James rebukes them saying, you adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred towards God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. And the point of what James is saying here is the root cause behind these fights and quarrels are some in the church are having an affair with the world. They betray their marriage covenant with God. You see, choosing to be a friend of the world and allow our hearts to love the things of the world is adultery. Just like a married person cannot have another, Jesus said you cannot love both God and money. You can't have divided loyalties when it comes to loving God. Years ago, I rowed in a crew at Leichhardt Rowing Club. And the process is when you launch the boat, you would take the boat down to the pontoon at the water's edge. You put one foot in the boat and then push off from the pontoon, sit down, and away you go. One thing I learned very quickly is you can't have one foot in the boat and one foot on the land. Well, you can for a moment, but not for long. And so I quickly learned that one day as I ended up straddling both. The boat got further and further away from the pontoon, and even my long legs could only stretch so far. Eventually, I ended up in the water. Friends, you can't have a foot in both camps when it comes to God and the world. And James is saying, you can't be friends of the world and be friends with God. Friendship with God is an exclusive relationship. And therefore, our hearts are to be devoted to him, not to being friends with the world. Just as no husband or wife would tolerate a rival for their spouse's affections, God is a loving husband and he's no exception. He is jealous for us. He loves us. He gave up his son for us. And when we fail to love God and turn to the idols of this world, when we're devoted to things of this world, well, it betrays God and shows we don't really love him. Notice how in verse 4, James is speaking about those who choose to be friends of the world. They are the ones who are enemies of God. He's not referring to a Christian who occasionally slips up and sins. This is someone who wants to have a foot in both camps. This is the person who says, I can be a Christian and I can also love the world. Now what James is saying loud and clear here in these verses is that it is impossible to be a Christian and not be fully devoted to God. It's impossible to be a follower of Jesus and think you can pick and choose what you hand over to him and what you don't. It's not okay to treasure certain sins, to shrug off the need to change. And this is true for all areas of our life, our sexuality and how we express it, our time and how we allocate it, our life goals and how we prioritize them, our retirement and how we use it. And it's especially true of our money and how we spend it. And while God is a jealous God and he calls on us to love him with all our heart, his love for us is not conditional on our obedience or our morality or our devotion. For if it were, he would divorce us on the spot. But he doesn't. Because he's a God who shows more grace. And so whatever the problem, whatever the sin, whatever the struggle, whatever the battle, whatever the failure, whatever the weakness, God's grace is greater. That's what verse 6, he gives us more grace, literally means. He gives greater grace. Here's the great news of the gospel, friends, that despite our many sins, even though we were so often desire to be friends with the world, God gives us more grace. There's always more grace. It's always greater grace. It is an inexhaustible supply of grace. That's a great comfort and blessing of being a follower of Jesus. But notice, grace isn't given to everyone. God gives it to those who are humble. Verse 6. When we stand before God with arms folded and defiance of him, he will oppose you. But when we come to God in humility, well, he will show greater grace. And so God is jealous for his people. He loves them. He will not tolerate divided loyalties and hearts. And so he calls on us to stop being friends with the world and instead submit ourselves and our hearts to him. But how do we do it? What does it mean to humble ourselves before God? Well, that's what James spells out in verses 7 to 10. First, it involves submitting to God, verse 7. We say to God, I don't want to play any more games, no more compromises, no more secret sins, and instead say, I want to go your way. I want to obey your word. And most importantly, take up my cross and follow Jesus. Secondly, verse 7 is to resist the devil. You see, to submit to God means we must resolutely refuse to bow to the devil's authority. The devil seeks to undermine God's plans and God's people. And one way he does that is by tempting us to be friends with the world, tempting us to value what the world values, such as money, success, wealth, and comfort, tempting us to think that we can have a foot in both camps, loving the world as well as loving God. And so as we submit to God and resist the devil, he will flee, because whatever power the devil may have, he is no match for God and his people. Thirdly, submission to God involves coming near to God, verse 8. The change James is calling on here is not merely a rejection of friendship with the world, it's a personal move towards God. God is relational. He wants us to come near to him. He wants us to be in relationship with him, to love him, to be devoted to him. And the promise for those who draw near to God is, he will draw near to you. Picture the prodigal son coming up the path, head bowed, dejected, devastated, leading back to the farmhouse. And then in the distance, you see the father coming near, running down the path to embrace and welcome his son. This is what James is talking about. When you come near to God in humility and submission, he will come near to you and embrace you like a long-lost son or daughter. It's a beautiful image and a wonderful promise. So how do we come near to God? Well, of course, the Gospels make it clear, isn't it? It's through Jesus. Jesus says in John chapter 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. We can't come to God through striving harder, trying to be a better person, through our works and words. They don't bring us near to God. We come near to God when we put our trust in Jesus' death and resurrection for the forgiveness of our sin, so we can be reconciled to and welcomed home by God. You see in James, verse 8, James is saying that to come near to God, you need to wash your hands and purify your hearts. To come near to God means we need to be cleansed. But James is not saying that we can do that ourselves. The Bible's clear, we're unable to make ourselves clean. It's impossible for us to wash away our guilt and sin. Only Jesus' death in our place on the cross could do that. And so to wash and purify ourselves is to put our trust in Jesus. The only way we can come near to God is if we've turned to Christ and received the washing that only he can give. Lastly, submission to God will lead to mourning your sin, verse 9. James writes, grieve, mourn and wail, change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Now he's not saying Christians should be a bunch of sad sacks, walk around with their bottom lip dragging on the ground. But as Christians who submit to God, we ought to be deeply aware of our sin that should grieve us. We should not take our sin lightly. Mourning over our sin is the first step to coming near to God. If we don't care about our sin, if we think it doesn't matter, then we'll never come near. We'll never humble ourselves, and we'll never seek forgiveness through Jesus. But those who are humble, those who grieve over their sin, those who submit to God, he will lift them up. Imagine you're walking along George Street near Town Hall and a tourist stopped you and asked you how to get to North Sydney. Well, you tell them you've got to go downstairs to catch the train, wouldn't you? If you don't go down, well, you'll never get to where you need to go. And it's the same with us and God. You've got to go down in humility if you're ever going to go forward in your relationship with God. We must be willing to humble ourselves, friends, if we're ever going to experience God's wonderful and amazing grace and forgiveness of sin. And so if you and I are going to guard ourselves against being friends with the world, then you must humbly submit yourself to God, resist the devil, come near to him through Jesus. Mourn our sin. And as you do, God will lift you up. Now, verses 1 to 17, James goes on to provide some specifics of what submission to God looks like. It doesn't cover everything, but there's some examples of putting submission into practice. And in verses 11 and 12, he said, submitting to God means submitting to him as lawgiver and judge. He writes, brothers, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against his brother or judges him speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you are not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbour? You see, when you and I slander others, we're ignoring that royal law of loving one another. And in doing so, we're saying, I know better than God. God's law doesn't matter. It's optional, when it suits me. When we do this, friends, we're placing ourselves above the law, aren't we? Placing ourselves above God, making ourselves greater than God. The exact opposite of what coming humbly before him and submitting to him looks like. Rather, the Christian person whose head and heart has been gripped by the gospel recognizes there is only one lawgiver and judge, and it's God alone, the one who has power to save and destroy. And therefore we submit to him and his rule and his authority. We don't place ourselves above him in slandering and judging others. The second example he gives in verses 13 to 17 is submitting to his providence. And in these verses, James addresses the arrogance that can take hold when people think they can carry on life without reference to God. Now, he's not rebuking them for making plans or trying to make a profit. He's rebuking them for their worldly self-confidence as they chase after their life goals while ignoring God and failing to remember they're totally dependent on God's provision and providence. And so to this, in verse 14, James replies, why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a while and then vanishes. And James is right, isn't he? Even successful ones are but a mist. Our lives are but a mist, appearing and then disappearing in just a few short years. We do this a lot, don't we? How often do we see or hear others say, I'm going to work hard, save hard, invest wisely, and retire by this time, and then sit back, relax, and enjoy it? The truth is, we can't control any of that, can we? We get sick with life-changing diseases, we get made redundant from our job, the share markets go bust and halve our super. We just don't know, in the providence of God, what will happen tomorrow. We forget our life is but a mist that's here one day and gone the next. Instead, James insists that we should think and act as those who live under the providence of God. And say, as he says in verse 15, if it is the Lord's will, we will live or do this or that, do that. You see, submitting to God is to acknowledge our lives are in his hands. The one who is the sustainer of all things. The one who is sovereignly in control of our life and has numbered our days according to his good will and purposes. Now, James is not rejecting forward planning. He's not rejecting having life insurance or superannuation. But his point is, all our life should be lived under the providence of God. Otherwise, our life would be full of boasting and bragging, where we arrogantly think that our life's destiny is in our own hands. Now, James is not saying that we should all run around saying, if it is the Lord's will, every time we go and do something. Hey, honey, I'm just popping out to get some milk. If it's the Lord's will, that is. Or we kiss our kids or grandkids goodnight. Good night, sweetheart. See you in the morning. Well, maybe, if it's the Lord's will. He's not saying that. But his point is that when we submit to God, we acknowledge that we live and breathe and work by the will of God. And we are to live our lives submitting to his sovereign care. And friends, this means we ought to evaluate our plans and goals in light of God and his kingdom and his purposes. We ought to ask ourselves, is this use of my money, this purchase of this house or unit, this career or job I'm considering, this use of my retirement, this direction I'm about to head in, is this the best way I can serve God and his kingdom? Is this in line with the Lord's will? Because friends, life is short and people are lost and eternity is forever. And we have a few short years in this life to do the Lord's will while he puts breath in our lungs. And we don't know how long we've got, do we? So let's not waste it on trivial things that are going to mean nothing or achieve nothing when it comes to eternity. So brothers and sisters, where do your loyalties lie? Are they divided? Are you choosing to be friend of the world? Are you being double-minded? James says, be warned. Whoever chooses to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. And so heed James's warning. Submit yourself wholeheartedly to God, knowing that those who humbly repent and draw near to him, he will lift up, because he shows more grace. Let me pray. Our gracious God, we thank you that you give grace to the humble, that you welcome those who are willing to submit themselves to you. Lord, we pray that by the power of your Spirit,